It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on this Thursday. 1 hour to go before we hand things off to the Rooster. If you're not subscribed to the Team 980's YouTube page, be sure to do that. You can follow me on Twitter at The Denton Day. Let's go out to the phones. Our guy Brian DiArdo, CBS Sports, is kind enough to give us a few moments here on a Thursday. Brian, first and foremost, man, always appreciate it, so thanks for making some time for us. What did you think of the tush push not being banned after it felt like yesterday, all morning, it was going to be banned?
Well, hey, Denton's always going to be with you guys. Yeah, I mean, we, as most media outlets do, we kind of had a story all ready to roll, and it failed, and it didn't fail, so we kind of had to scramble and piece together a story saying that it survived. You know, I'm somewhat surprised, but not entirely, because, you know, as you know, last month when they voted on it the first time, there was a 16-16 split. They needed 24 votes to you know, push the proposal over the goal line. So I just thought that to get 8 more votes was going to be tough, you know, and they got 6 more. And I think Jeffrey Loria, you know, came in guns blazing. You know, he was going to try to make sure this proposal passed or do everything in his power to make sure it passed. And he brought in Jason Kelce, who, according to ESPN's reporting, I think had a significant role in the tush push surviving. Already the second the Steelers president, I think, actually told ESPN that he believes that Kelce was able to sway a few voters to change their mind. And ultimately, you know, they were able to get just enough support, the 22-10, which ironically was the score of the Eagles playoff over the Packers, the team that submitted the proposal. So I am surprised, but not entirely surprised. And I think overall the main thing is, until there is concrete evidence that suggests the play is more dangerous than normal plays, then I think, you know, it's going to be hard to overrule this. And unfortunately, I think all of us hope that there's not a terrible injury on this play that would obviously, you know, would expedite, you know, this getting outlawed or banned or whatever. But I will say this, I think it's on borrowed time, and I think this was a stay of execution. I think, you know, next year, if this is still an issue, I think that they're going to get that 2 or 3 extra votes to outlaw this.
So, Brian, I've seen the news that you just gave us about Jason Kelce and his speech. Do you have any idea what he actually said that was able to sway the votes? I haven't seen any reporting on that.
So I think it was a lot of the owners, I think, just appreciated having the player's perspective. And I think he kind of came into it like almost like Loria was the bad cop, he was the good cop. And he said on his podcast, and to your point, there hasn't been a lot of specifics regarding what he said, but he did say on his podcast, like, I don't care if this passes or not, but I want to just go and kind of present, you know, a player's perspective on the play and actually kind of more explain the intricacies of the play. Because I think a lot of us just look at it, they think rugby scrum, you know, it's kind of barbaric. There's not a lot of schematics involved with it. So I think he did a good job with the owners kind of presenting the play, also reinforcing that, you know, the safety elements of it. And I also think he did want to debunk rumors in the previous league meeting about his reasoning to retire and how it may have been impacted by the tush push and injuries he may have suffered because of the play. And he did say on his podcast he was going to debunk those. Specifically, I heard there was a good back and forth between him and Jerry Jones. And at one point, you know, the Cowboys owner, obviously, and at one point I think he even said to Jerry, like, oh, I see your point on that, or you know, I understand your concerns here. So, you know, maybe Kelce's got a lot on his plate already, but maybe a salesman or a product supporter might not be a bad job title to add to it. But I just think, you know, his clarity, his transparency, I think there were pictures and videos of the play that complemented his speech. So I just think the way he talked to the owners, the way he discussed everything, I think they appreciated it. And I think overall it was a significant factor in the play surviving.
Do you think that Kelce will now be brought in by other NFL teams so they can utilize his knowledge of the play? Because obviously he's Philadelphia through and through, but he's not employed by them anymore. And he clearly knows the ins and outs of the play because no one else across the league has done it as well as Philadelphia. And he's been a key component to that. Do you think that there might be some teams that try and utilize some of the knowledge that he either presented during this meeting or just use his knowledge in general this offseason to come up with their own way of doing it?
a fantastic question, but I think the question was answered in something that you said, which is he's Philadelphia through and through. So you'd have to, and he's made a good amount of money in his playing career and his post-playing career. So I don't know, a blank check might be what it takes for that to happen, especially if it's Jerry Jones. Or now, again, I could see Jerry Jones, you know, saddling up to him somewhere with the Johnny Walker Blue and saying, you know, come over down to Dallas for a weekend and let's talk about this a little more. But yeah, I mean, to your point. Now, that being said, I think if it was like a general presentation to the league, then I, like, similar to yesterday, or if he went to select camps, I think if it was more of a broader thing, I could see that, but I can't see him going to like a New York or a Dallas or Washington, right? And try to, well, I don't think Green Bay would invite him, so we don't have to worry about them. But yeah, I don't think he'll be doing that like team by team. I will say this though, quickly. I do think that the owners like the player perspective, and I think that's something that if there's players, you know, like Kelsey, that are willing to speak and that have the respect of the owners that Kelsey has, I think that might be something that happens more during these meetings.
Yeah, Washington should have sent Frankie Louvu there. You're like, hey, this is why I hate the play.
That's true.
And maybe we could get rid of it. I'm curious for you personally, because it feels like everyone has a side that they fall with this particular play. Are you in favor of the tush push, or do you also want it banned?
I don't really care. And I know that's not sexy radio and you just said everybody's got an opinion. I don't frankly have one. I don't. So I guess by saying that, I'm not against it. So I guess that means I'm for it. So I kind of walked through my own thought process on that on air here with you and your listeners. But I'm not fazed by it. To me, it's just another play and it's part of the game. And to me, it's a juiced up version or roided up version of the quarterback sneak. I do think that there is an element of, I think just because no one's gotten seriously injured yet doesn't mean that that won't happen at some point. And I don't like the fact that we're kind of just waiting to change. I like being preeminent, right? Like, let's try to fix it before it gets bad. And I think that is part a lot of the owner's concerns. And, you know, and I will say this again, like, you know, like we all know speeding isn't a great idea, like going 95 into 35. We don't need to get in a car accident to know that. And so, you know, having a quarterback getting shoved by people behind him when he's trying to, you know, push through a guy in front of him that's 300 some pounds, who is also trying to block two or three guys that are also 300 pounds, it's probably not a great idea. So I do think that there is absolutely an injury element to the play and puts players at risk. So, but the issue is, again, I mean, there's no, you know, data that's been presented yet to suggest that this play is more dangerous than others, but I don't like that element of the play. But everything else with it, I'm fine with. And I think it's become like a free throw, right, in the NBA, where once, you know, the Eagles need a yard, they're going to get it. So I just think that this creates challenges for other teams. And I'm a fan of evolution. I mean, the NFL is a game that's evolved just like other sports have, you know, with the NBA, with the three-point shot and things like that. So I'm all for evolving the game. Let's just hope that from a safety perspective, the play continues to run the way it does without a big injury to you know, any of the players involved.
Brian Diardo, CBS Sports, with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. Why do you think that the Lions pulled their request for new seating at the meetings yesterday?
I'm really glad you asked me this question because I was on another show yesterday and I was gathering information about this when I was asked and I wasn't quite equipped yet, but I am now. So from what I've read and researched, the NFL kind of like nudged them to present it. Like they Roger Goodell reportedly does not like the current playoff structure. And he wanted somebody to present the initiative. And the Lions, obviously, as we know, you know, they were one loss away from being 14-3 and going on the road. Ultimately, that was the Vikings that had to do that after losing to Detroit in Week 18. But I think it was pulled because they knew it wasn't going to pass. And I don't think the NFL wanted that initiative to be voted on. And it was a blowout, right? Like 27-5 or 30-2 or something like that. So
right.
I don't think the NFL wanted that presented until it had a legitimate chance to win and or just some momentum, right? Like if they knew it would fail, but it would be like a 22-10 or it would be like a something a little bit closer that they could build off of, I think they would present it. But I think because they knew it had zero chance, I think they politely asked Detroit, "Hey, let's walk this back and wait." But on a personal note, I think it has merit, the changing of the playoff format to where you're just ranking seeds based off of record. But I do think at the end of the day, the better team is going to win. Like we knew Washington last year was better than Tampa Bay. They had to go to Tampa Bay because Tampa won their division and Washington didn't. Washington won the game. So I don't think it really matters at the end of the day, but I do think that the NFL has initiative that they want to get this changed. But obviously the owners aren't on board just yet.
I'm curious as to why you think that is, because at least from a practical standpoint, it would make a lot of sense that the team that had a better regular season gets a home game versus a team that didn't because they played in a bad division.
That's an excellent question. All I can say is, Mike Tomlin, the Steelers head coach, for example, loves divisions. You know, old school division guy. And I do think it does present an easier route to having a home game, right? You just have, it's very cut and dry. Like, I think, you know, these owners, a lot of them are rich businessmen, right? Who made their careers on assurances and guarantees. So for them, it's like, okay, and it's money, right? It's money. So if you're the Cowboys, and let's be honest, like, you play in a hard division, you know it's going to be tough to have a better record than Detroit. Oh, but if I win my division, I get to host a playoff game and all that money and revenue that comes in. So I think for them, they look at the dollar signs, right? So it's easier for them to win your division. You get a sure playoff game, you get all the money that comes with it, and you can sell division champs merchandise, which you could do anyways without the seedings, but whatever. But yeah, I think money certainly plays into it, along with the fact that it's a guaranteed home playoff game if you just have to win your division. But still, yeah, I mean, you would think that, like, the Vikings, you know, brass would want this change, and other teams would want this change, that play in harder divisions and have to go on the road when you're 14-3, which had never happened prior to last year.
Yeah, that's just such a fascinating dynamic because of last year. And, like, as you mentioned, the better team is going to win regardless. I mean, I'll ask you this, because I have a number in my head. When I think of home field advantage in the NFL, I can think of about three teams that I legitimately believe have home field advantage. Is there a number that you have thought about? Like, do you really believe in this idea of home field advantage?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, Green Bay has an advantage, but I say that with the knowledge that the 49ers have gone in there several times in recent years, a warm weather team, and beaten them, right? And the Buccaneers, albeit they had Tom Brady, say a little bit of a cheat code, but they have too. So I have never honestly really, really thought about that. But, like, Philadelphia for sure, because A, it's cold and you know, in the playoff time, and their fans are their fans. So I think Washington Washington could be one, obviously, with their fans and everything. And I'm going back decades, but their history, right? Like, Washington was known during the Joe Gibbs era as an incredibly hard place to play for teams, and I'm sure his home record represented that. So, but no, I don't think there's like for example, like, I don't think the Rams Stadium proposes any kind of threat to visiting teams, right? You know, maybe Minnesota, Chicago, if it ever got cold, but I don't think we have to worry about them hosting a playoff game anytime soon. But I think any team with cold weather is certainly going to have advantages. But no, I don't think there's like any old, like again, like, let's look at the Vet back in the day with that awful turf. Like, most teams in these now are good enough where it's not going to be a huge disadvantage for a team that has to play there.
So as we pivot away, talking with Brian Diardo, CBS Sports, here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin, as we pivot away from all of the happenings of yesterday and the meetings, and just looking at this offseason broadly, you mentioned the Chicago Bears. They've had one of the better off seasons, but as we sit here now in, like, the realm of OTAs but not quite training camp, who do you think has had the best offseason across the league?
So, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on Washington air, but like, Washington I had penciled as, like, one. I think Chicago, as you alluded to, and I think Washington's had one of the best off seasons. Like, I think with the Samuel acquisition, you know, Larry Tumsil, and then I thought the Jalen Lane acquisition later in the draft was great. You know, the receiver that can back up, you know, McLaurin, Noah Brown, and Samuel. And then you look at the defensive side, and free agency basically acquired you know, three potential starters with Kinlaw and Wise on the defensive line and Harris the safety. And Wise, I thought, was a really nice signing. A longtime Patriot. I think he was on their last Super Bowl team with their dynasty. Just a consummate professional, and that was an area that they needed to address. And I just thought they did a good job, like, using the draft or the free agency to address specific issues that they kind of want to fix now. Like, they can't wait for rookies to come along and help on the defensive line. They needed, like, legit guys they could bring in that they know are going to help solidify that part of their team, which they did with Kinlaw and Wise. And they also got Samuel, so they, you know, they give Jaden Daniels yet another weapon. You know, so I think they've had a tremendous offseason. I would say the one thing they have to figure out, which I know I'm sure you've been talking about, is Terry McLaurin's his contract quickly got old. I remember when he signed it, like, oh, that's a great deal, good for him. And then I looked at it today, and I was like, oh, wow, this guy, this guy dated, like, super, super fast. So, yeah, so that's something they have to figure out. But you know, I thought they had a good offseason as well. And I, not a Cowboys fan, I will give them some credit. I mean, George Pickens, the person, there's a lot to be desired, but a very good acquisition for just a third-round pick. So that division only got tougher. I think in general, all four teams in the NFC East had very strong offseasons. So arguably the toughest division in the NFL is only going to get harder.
So I'll get you out of here on this, Brian. Jim Mercer passed away yesterday. We talked about his impact here because he was one of the first owners that spoke up against Dan Snyder when we all wanted Dan Snyder the hell up out of here. How do you think as a whole, though, the league ends up remembering Jim Mercer?
Great question. I think, and I just wrote about this for CBS, and it's a shame I oversaw the Snyder thing. That's a great nugget as well, Denton. But I remember him. He was great in the indie community, really great. But I think his legacy with the league is ultimate players owner. Like, represented three guys in the Hall of Fame. He would have done that more for players in the future had he not passed. Like, super charitable. I think him and like DeBartolo, the old 49ers owner, like, I don't think anybody really did more for their players than him. Like, while they played and after they played, like, Pat McAfee had a really nice tribute to him on social media. Like, he just went out of his way to celebrate his players and their accomplishments. Like, some people made fun of him for the Colts 2014 AFC finalist banner, but to me, I just thought that was just a symbol of how proud he was of his team's accomplishments. And, like, I think before he became their owner in 97, like, they'd had some success in Indy since moving from Baltimore, but, like, they really, I don't know, I think they were still kind of an afterthought in Indianapolis. I think once he got there and the things they did, I mean, people forget that, like, they easily could have taken Ryan Leaf over Manning, and most people wouldn't have thought much of it, but they didn't, and they took the right guy, and they made a lot of great moves with him as the owner. And so I think his legacy, that will also be included, that he brought the legacy of a winning culture to Indianapolis and made football there relevant.
Brian, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Hope you're doing well. We'll do this again soon.
Yeah, likewise. Anytime. Thanks.
That is Brian DiArdo, CBS Sports, kind enough to give us a few moments here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. By the way, for those that are wondering, the three teams that I think have the home field advantage in the NFL are the Seahawks, the Chiefs, and the Saints. The Saints, when that dome is blacked out, has to be like the most intimidating place to play in the NFL. Lights already dim, and then you have nothing but, you know, people in black shirts or jerseys or whatever. So it's like tough to see. I think that's one of the most intimidating places to play. That aside, big thanks to Brian. Always love having the conversation with him. Somebody needs to get on the phone with Jason Kelce. If he's going to do this, what he did, which is fine. It's totally fine that he defended the play in the way that he did. Does he want to teach it? He's not going to come here. I get that. He has said on multiple occasions he is not a fan of Washington, just based off of the years in the NFC East, playing here, us coming there, like what have you. He is not a fan of Washington. But eventually, that dude's going to go door to door to all these NFL teams and explain why this play works. And maybe it won't be as big of a deal. I will tell you what. I will love the tush push a lot more if this team starts doing it well. Now, I will also say this team had one of the best fourth down percentages in the entire NFL and did not need to use a quarterback sneak to get first downs because number five is dynamic as hell, whereas clearly Jalen Hurts is not as good of with some of those decisions. That's why they do the tushing of the pushing thing. He has big quads, whatever. All right, coming up, 15 minutes, Toby Altizer going to jump on with us, talk a little bit of Nationals baseball. What is the latest on Dylan Cruz, when we will see him back, and how the team has played to start this portion of the season. But coming up next, something Mark Gines said about the upcoming stadium at RFK that I think is going to make it a home run. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.